Welcome back to The Bottom Line. I'm Doug Wells. For the second half of the program, we feature a local spotlight interview. These local spotlights will occasionally be featured on the program throughout the season. These are shorter interviews that focus on the earlier stages of a company's development. The Bottom Line typically focuses on later stage companies that have already achieved impressive market positions. Our hope is that these earlier stage stories give you a more complete picture of the entrepreneurial ecosystem here in Utah. My guest today is Jed Beal, co-owner of Jed's Barbershop. Jed Beal, thank you for joining us on The Bottom Line.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
So you own three local barbershops. Tell us what you're trying to accomplish with those barbershops. How are they different than where a traditional cut would be done?
Yeah, that's a great question. Right now, a lot of barbershops are popping up all over Salt Lake City and all over the United States, really. And they all have a common theme that they cater to men 25 to 45 years old. And they all kind of are going back to the old school roots of that traditional look. That's never been our intention. Our goal is to create a family barbershop for grandchildren and grandparents and everyone in between. So we have a much broader stroke. And we are trying to make getting a haircut fun again.
That's important, particularly when you have grandkids.
Yes.
And trying to be a place for families, you've done a lot of things, including simple things like serving root beer for your younger clients. It turns out in the state of Utah, serving root beer is not as easy as it would appear. Apparently, it's okay to do it in a bottle, but not out of a tap. What happened there?
Sure. So we go through about 7,000 bottles of root beer and soda every month, right? And that's a lot of glass. So I wanted to put in a keg. Problem with a keg is that you need to have a beer license for a keg. And especially if you're a barbershop. So I put in a keg of root beer, and the fellows down at Wasatch Brewing Company helped me out with that. They actually gave me the keg at cost, and really, you know, we went through so much of their root beer. And the state came in and said, you got to shut this operation down. This is not a bar. And so that was the end of the keg. And now it's back to bottles. And to offset that, we pay for our own recycling and have someone come down. And that's great because we're also supporting a local recycling company, too.
Right. Nice. Yeah. So root beer for the young kids. What else do you do to make it more family friendly?
Sure. So when you walk into a Jed's, our whole goal is to make you smile. So you might walk past a picture of Christopher Walken and a sign that says Walken's Welcome, right? That might bring a smile to your face. When you walk in, there are everything from pool tables to foosball to old 80s arcade games, pinball machines for grandpa. Then there's an old-fashioned refrigerator from the 40s that at each location that you could pull open because it's your home and pull out a bottle of, you know, Huckleberry soda or root beer, Wasatch root beer. There is a waiting area, and in the waiting area we don't allow modern day magazines. We actually fill it up with old vintage magazines from back in the days, but we also have a lot of funny books, like just, you know, your dad was the original hipster type of book. And so everyone feels comfortable at our shop, whether you come in your pajamas or in a three-piece suit. You feel very welcomed at our shop. And that's really our goal. And another thing that kind of distinguishes us, to get back to that original question, is that we are not in the business of doing men's cuts. We do short haircuts and we do long haircuts, right? And there is no sex with that.
Is it kind of one style for everybody? Like if you do a shortcut, is it the same for most people or no?
No. I mean, people come in with their pictures and how they want their hair cut. But for us, really society is changing, right, in so many different ways. And so it's not uncommon at Jed's to have two moms bring in their kid for a haircut, right? And also people identify in a lot of different ways nowadays, right? So we do short haircuts and then we do long haircuts, right? So what a lot of people say when they walk into Jed's is that it feels like they're walking into New York, Seattle, some kind of urban place like that. And I think that's because our culture really is one where we embrace everybody. Like it's not a niche market. It's not for just men, and we're not catering to the needs of men. We really are trying to make a broader stroke, and we're trying to make it a fun environment for everyone to come in. So if you leave with a great haircut, that's nice, but if you don't leave with a smile, or you don't walk in with a smile, or there's not a smile at some point in there, then we didn't do our job.
If you're just joining us this morning, our guest today is Jed Beal. He is the co-owner of Jed's Barbershop, a classic shop with a modern feel to get your haircut. So this is a very unique idea for a barbershop in the way, I love the way you describe it, which is really what you're doing is providing the client and his or her family an opportunity to enjoy the process of getting their haircut. How did you come up with the idea of we should focus on the experience, we should focus on the smile versus the haircut?
It really came out of a desire to see something that I wanted to go to. So I always enjoyed getting my haircut. I was also a trained barber, and so I had a love of the craft, but I didn't feel comfortable going to barbershops, believe it or not. I'd walk in and be a bunch of old guys in white jackets, and it was a very stale environment, and people were talking about whatever sports were up on the TV, and none of this stuff clicked with me because I knew nothing of sports unless it was kickboxing or something like that. And I loved photography. I loved 80s television shows and cartoons. I loved toys. I loved old vintage magazines. And so one day I just thought, there's not really a place that marries all the things I like with the barbering. And so I'm going to do it. And we did that 7 years ago in 2011. And there was a little thing called a recession going on at the time. And I thought, what a great opportunity to test a new business idea in a new market that's never seen anything like this.
What were the early days like?
Very difficult. People didn't really get us. When they thought of a barbershop, they thought of what I had already described to you, white jackets and, or they thought of a franchise chain that wasn't really a barbershop at all.
And what types of things did you do so that now people get it? I mentioned you have three locations. Mm-hmm. Obviously, eventually the market did get it. They loved mm-hmm. it, and you've expanded. What helped you get them to understand your vision?
Well, we had to actually get them into our shop. So we had to go to our clients because people would see the barber pole outside and never walk in. They wouldn't see the difference. And so what we started doing was music concerts in our shop. So I would invite local bands to come in on Sunday nights and perform for free. We got on board a person that was a writer at City Weekly, and he would write about local shows that were happening at our shop. And so people started coming in for the music. That's how they became familiar. They'd see that we were different. We, had a different vibe. We had a different feel. Yet we were still calling ourselves a barbershop. Then we also created a barber bus. So we took the shop to other people. And so in this barber bus, it was a 1972 International bread truck that we wrapped with the barbershop logo and stuff. And we would take that to music concerts. We'd take it to tailgate parties. We would take it to farmers markets. And basically we'd pop up shop and cut hair. And do free mohawks and mullets at the U of U games and things like that. And so we were constantly bringing the shop to people so that they would get it, so that they would understand what we were doing that was a little bit different. And that took, 2 or 3 years of not collecting a paycheck myself. My wife and I would often have food donated to us by friends. We couldn't afford a car, so we made sure that we lived near our shops. And we really, really had to just run with the dream and hope that it caught on. And slowly but surely, it started to catch on. The marketing started to pay off. We also had a big franchise chain that was attempting to, to shut us down when we first opened.
You were talking about the music, and they were a rock and roll themed national chain that didn't like the fact you were playing rock and roll music in your barbershop. Is that correct?
It wasn't the rock and roll music. What it was at the time that we looked very different. I had album covers all over my walls. because I was attracted to the Americana, the artwork in it. And they had posters in their shops, like the Doors posters and Beatles posters and things like that. And I thought, you know, one's a poster and one's album covers, right? But one writer had went to a show and he wrote about us in an article and he called us a rock and roll barbershop, which is their tagline. So that alerted us to, you know, that alerted them of us being in town. And then, you know, we found out too that they had franchisees that were potential for Utah. And so really it started this race of, if I can get our shop up and running and going before these guys get to town, then we're going to set the trend. We're going to be doing all right. If we can do this in a recession, we're going to kick butt when we're out of the recession.
And when was that inflection point? When did you realize, you know what, okay, now I can afford to pay myself a salary. I think this concept's going to take off and it's going to work.
Year four.
It was a long time to go 4 years. It just speaks to the dedication that it takes sometimes to get mm-hmm. these companies launched.
Yeah, you know, and it wasn't so much launching the company. I had to go through a lot of personal changes in order to, you know, I thought by starting my own business that I would have all this freedom. And I didn't realize that the price of freedom was your freedom, right? And so, you know, I started a job so that I could work for myself. And what I was doing was working for everyone else. And, you know, I signed paychecks for everyone else for 3 years and not myself. And it didn't seem like anyone cared, you know? And then I also didn't know much about leading people because I'd always been a one-man show. I was a barber, but before that, I also worked on my own in sales and things like that for Aveda, the company Aveda. But I was always a one-man show. I never had to be in charge of teams. And now the entire team depends on me for their paycheck. My vendors depend on me for, you know, reordering product. The banks depend on me to pay back my loan. My wife depends on me. And so I found I was just working for everyone else. And so what happened was at year four, I had to really reverse engineer my business model because I was giving away all my freedom and I wasn't leveraging out any of my work. I was trying to do everything myself. And so what I did was I read a book called The 4-Hour Workweek. I know a lot of people make fun of it, but it was really useful to me because it basically was saying, learn to leverage stuff out. Learn to take a pay cut. Well, at the time, I wasn't making any money. So I was fine with leveraging stuff out.
50% of zero is still zero.
Yeah. And so I started leveraging things out. And then what happened is over the last 3 years, the business really started to flourish. We've opened up 3 different shops. We're approaching $2 million in sales this year. We have 50 employees. You know, our employees are paid very well. You know, I have barbers that are making $70,000 a year, which is not bad for working 30 hours a week. My wife and I finally have a paycheck. But we reverse engineered the model. And so I'm a retired barber now, and I work on managing my teams, and I spend most of my time helping other business owners learn how to let go and to leverage out things. So for a little while there, I worked as a business coach with Anthony Robbins. Do you know who he is?
Sure, yeah.
And when that became a full-time job, I had to give it up, but... yeah, it's, you know, the entire journey's been outstanding, and I think the biggest thing that I value is problems. Like, problems are candy to me. They're like breakfast cereal to me. I eat them for breakfast, you know, because they've...
It's nice when you get to that point, right? Because when you first start off, it's every problem is, oh my gosh, this is going to crater my business, and you don't quite know how to solve it. And by going through the fire that you and your wife went through, you gain confidence in yourself, and you know that when problems come up, you may not know what the solution is right now, but you know you'll find the solution.
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, when you first start out, you're trying to avoid problems. You're trying to, you know, you sort of think you're not supposed to be encountering these problems. But my wife and I don't have children, but, you know, We would laugh at a parent that said, I didn't realize I'd have so many problems. Because it's just, problems are part of the game, right? And so now, every single problem has contributed to our success in some way or another. And so I don't look at them as problems, I look at them as opportunities. And that's not just to be sort of this positive thinking kind of guy. I mean, I literally am addicted to solving problems, and some people do crossword puzzles. I go out to business owners and say, give me your most difficult problem. I just want to chew on it, you know.
And so what's the most difficult problem in your business right now?
I would say that the most difficult problem is that barbering is becoming very popular. And so it's sort of this cool thing to be, kind of like how chefs became very popular in the 90s with all these cooking shows. Barbering is becoming very popular, and it's got its own culture. However, ego is probably the thing that could kill our business and kill a person's career. And so how do you tame someone's ego without killing their spirit?
So that's the biggest challenge. As you look at the next 5 years, I mean, you've been in business about 7 years, 8 years, and boy, you've been through it all.
A lot, yeah.
What do you hope the next 5 years looks like for Jed's Barbershop?
Our goal for the next 5 years is, you know, we could have blown up. We were offered big national franchise deals because our business model works really well. And what happened was, in that process of franchising, you know, getting our logo registered and creating all the paperwork and doing all that, my wife and I realized that this was a very simple business plan, but we had learned so many lessons. And if we hand this over to somebody that doesn't love barbering, then, you know, it's just this business model where they're investing and making money, which that's totally fine. But I started to think about our barbers and what were their futures. You know, what are they going to do in 20 years? And so what we decided to do was create a partnership with our barbers. And so now what we're doing is all the other Jeds that open up will be owned by our barbers. We'll be co-owners with them. We'll still run the marketing and things that we do well. But they will own the Jeds Barbershops, and they will be able to retire off of Jed's Barbershops.
I love that model. It takes care of your team, and you can tell that that's a core value that you have. Jed, we need to wrap up, but sure. I want to thank you for sharing your story with us today on The Bottom Line.
Thank you.
Our guest this morning has been Jed Beal, co-owner of Jed's Barbershop. Today's show was recorded at the KCPW studios on Library Square and produced by Christian Camargo. Thank you, Christian. You can hear my entire interview with Jed on our website, kcpw.org, or on The Bottom Line podcast. I'm Doug Wells. Join us next week on The Bottom Line.